Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you, Jim.
Joseph, are you overall optimistic on the crude market?
Well, I think that we've seen a $17, $18 rally to just under $85 over the last number of weeks, which peaked last week, because of everybody having optimism about China, that it would reopen, that the demand would be stronger, and that we would probably see demand greater than supply. The IEA put out a report like that, and there was a lot of chatter on that. And so we went from, the 60s into that, in mid-60s into the 84, 88, I think was the exact high last week. Since then, we've given back about $4 because China's talked about slowing economy, one of their second largest real estate companies with $70 billion of debts. Hasn't made the interest payments. They have a 30-day forbearance period now. If they don't pay them, then you've got a big real estate problem in there. And then the consumer side's been very weak. And one thing that was very telling is youth unemployment. You saw the press release, I think, that youth unemployment was 21.4%, and the government now doesn't want to send those results out, so they're going to not make them available anymore. Because youth unemployment is so high. And one of the reports that attached to that said that 40% of college graduates in China from every jurisdiction of education were not able to get jobs when they graduated. So there are some severe economic problems. We've seen even Tesla lower the price of cars there last week and then again this week. The competition in the EV world, which you think would be kind of a stable part of the economy in China, is also facing some trouble. So it looks like the drag from China. And remember, China would import a lot of stuff, raw materials, including energy, and if they won't, because of the decline in imports and the decline in exports, they're not going to be doing as much. Countries like Germany are very impacted because a lot of the luxury items bought in China are, German cars or, other things like that. So it's going to be a tougher time, and that's starting to weigh on the markets. We've now seen a couple days in a row where the Dow is down. We're seeing the NASDAQ be the worst of the three industries between the Dow, the S&P, and the Dow. And we're seeing today risk-off trade with the Bitcoin, where it's down almost 4%, over $1,200, I think the last time I saw, below 28,000. So the risk-off trade is now coming into play here. The market had such a fabulous run. You had the AI craze, you had the FANG craze, you had stocks trading up significant on the quarter, second quarter results, and I think now we're going to probably see a correction of some magnitude, I think maybe below 30,000 on the Dow, and maybe below 3,600 on the S&P, and that's going to be a detriment to the markets in the near term, probably between now and probably the end of October.
Why does crude remain so strong compared to other sectors? I just completed an interview with Rick Ackerman, and he said, yeah, real estate, commodities, all these things are in jeopardy of a big correction. But he said crude could hit 105 easily.
Well, the only way I see an increase is when we get into winter, you know, 23, 24. And if we have this year, because of El Nino, we've had a lot of fires, we've had a lot of moisture, flooding, you know, there's been dams that have broken, and so we're having more moisture in the air. So if we have a lot more moisture in the winter months, more snow, more cold conditions, then we could see, you know, demand for energy pick up, natural gas probably more so than oil, and that could get you up there. The only way I see $100 oil over the next 3 to 4 months would be if there was a major problem with a senior OPEC producer, i.e. some kind of military event, which stopped them from producing, or labor issue. We're already seeing, you know, for example, natural gas prices in Europe are popping because they import LNG from Australia, and two of the major plants, Woodside and Chevron, may go on strike, which means 10% of the LNG in the world won't be coming on. And so there's going to be, you know, a shortage situation going into winter, which would probably push prices up. So I think natural gas has more of an oomph to it on the upside than oil. Oil would only react to $100 oil on some physical disruption of supply. You know, we don't see that yet.
Mm-hmm. Now, with natural gas, I've asked the question before, has Canada missed the boat on LNG? Because we have Quebec doesn't want pipelines, although they don't mind Alberta oil money.
Well, people don't even realize that a lot of the manufacturing of facilities for the LNG on the West Coast is going to be done in Ontario and Quebec. So, you know, it's like I think they have to realize the benefits that they're getting, you know, from it. And I think LNG, you know, Canada's going to be complete in, you know, 2024, early 25, they'll be shipping. Coastal Natural Gas, the TransCanada call showed that they were 90% complete. So sometime in the next 6 months, they'll be starting to put gas in the pipe so they can get the things ready for LNG exports in Q1 of 25. And we're seeing more progress on, you know, the Kisi-Kissimmee deal, you know, with the First Nations there, Wood Fibers moving forward, Cedars moving forward. So we're beginning to see more and more of these projects get the go-ahead after their environmental reviews. And the reason I think we're seeing more progress is the First Nations are big parts of it, and they are big beneficiaries of jobs and ownership. And I think that's going to be very helpful to move natural gas forward. It's only 15, 20 years, you know, behind what we thought it was supposed to be, but it looks like our day has come.
Now, of course, there must be some chuckles in the energy business where we had BC Premier John Horgan, who has since stepped down, fought tooth and nail against the Trans Mountain Pipeline. And then right after he steps down as premier, he takes a job with Teck, one of the world's biggest coal exporters.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like when you're in politics, you play the game. And then when it's time for you to get a job and make some money, then you throw out that deck and you take a new deck. And, you know, it's the hypocrisy that we see from, the environmentalists, Suzuki and Gore and others. You know, they attack, and how bad the fossil fuel industry is. But how many homes do they own? How big are their homes? How much power are they using? How many jets do they fly on? You know, why aren't they flying commercial in the back of the bus, not the front of the bus? So, you know, the hypocrisy of all of this is just obscene. And, you know, they get away with it. They should be called to task.
Alberta Premier Danielle Smith has pretty well thrown down the gauntlet with Ottawa's demand that we have to go to solar and wind power by 2035, I think. She said 2050 for sustainable fuels makes a whole lot more sense. That was the original target. That's what Alberta planned to do. And do you think Ottawa has forgotten that Canada is the second coldest country in the world? And when you only have three-hour days up north, and the further north you go, the less wind and sun you get, because when it's really cold on the prairies, the wind stops. There's no energy to run it.
Yeah, the issue is, you know, that in Ontario and Quebec, you do have a lot of hydroelectric, And so they're benefiting from that and nuclear. And so, you know, they're doing what they want for Ontario and Quebec, and penalizing everyone else who's trying to find a solution to 2023, 2035 targets and 2050 targets. And you can, you know, not one shoe fits all provinces. And the, you know, the economies of them and what they have in their ability to generate power, and then the government, you know, attacks things like what Alberta wants to do, and yet, how much more electric power is going to be needed in Ontario for those EV plants that they're in, battery plants they're prepared to support, which means Ontario is going to need more cogen, which means they're not, and they can't do any more hydro, and nuclear takes a while. They're probably going to be doing more natural gas fired cogeneration. So, there's hypocrisy in all of it. And of course, remember, none of this is coming into play till 2035. And hopefully our prime minister is gonzo by then.
Now, also in BC, we rely on hydro power, but the province is in a drought. Many communities that relied on over the winter rain and snow to fill their reservoirs didn't get that rain and snow. They say it's going to get drier. Is BC barking up the wrong tree by relying on hydro so much?
Well, that hydro is also what they're talking to get these next phase of LNG plants. They want them to be on the electrical grid. Well, there's no way, you know, BC Hydro can do that. So, are they going to be cogen, or use the natural gas that's coming through the pipeline to do the, powering of those LNG plants and the liquefaction so they can go into the LNG, ships? I think that, the fact that BC Hydro's come clean out and said that it's impossible, that I think the BC government is just going to have to say, okay, what's the best way after that? And I think that's going to, and what's the cleanest way we can do it? And our LNG coming off the west coast of Canada will probably be the cleanest and most frugal use of power of any LNG anywhere in the world.
Germany built an LNG shipping facility to receive natural gas, as you said, from Australia, the U.S., in just a matter of months. Why does it take so long to build anything in Canada?
Well, I think, the hoops we have to go through that were created by the Prime Minister and the government, just means that the number of hoops is more. If you have a country which realizes they're in trouble because they're cutting off Russian natural gas, they can make very quick decisions, and also the cost of it was thrown out. So it's like, you know, when Kennedy said we got to get to the moon, the goal was there, and the restraints and shackles were taken off. Get there, do it. And I think that Germany has shown historically that when they need something to be done, on their economy or manufacturing or building or whatever, they're going to do it. Even the Greens supported, when there was a shortage of power, that they allowed coal fire to be done and more coal mines to be reopened, which were supposed to be closed. They wanted to close all the nuclear plants. They delayed that. So they seem to be a lot more rational and willing to make the tough choices when it's necessary.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Joseph, how healthy is the Canadian energy business?
Well, the prices have come down. Like, if you just look at quarter two's results, the companies were impacted. If they're in the Grand Prairie, Drayton Valley area, the liquids-rich natural gas, Montney, Duvernay players, they lost production because of the fires. But the more important point was the commodity price deck. If you look at for WTI, in Q2 22, we had $108.57 U.S., In Q2 23, that came down to $73.99 a barrel. That's down 32%. So you have 32% less price coming in. And of course, you had some volume loss if you were in the area where there was liquids rich. On the AECO side, AECO was 627 right after the invasion of, you know, Ukraine. And there was, of course, remember that big spike up in the price of natural gas, and European prices just went nuts, you know, the, you know, three, four, five times the price of North America. And now it's 235 in Q2 23. So that lower price of down by 63% has impacted the cash flows of the companies. Now, I believe that we're going to see, you know, much higher commodity prices for natural gas once we get into winter. Again, I mentioned that El Nino effect, that there's more moisture. We saw that, you know, with the rainstorms and all the problems that we had across the world, you know, dikes, flooding, other things are going on. And so I think that that'll create more moisture in the wintertime. And, of course, where you are, a couple days of snow on the ground makes things pretty tough. So I think you better buy your shovel while Canadian Tire still has them.
How is the rig count doing?
The rig count has come down. It's been like that, you know, because of the lower commodity prices. So if we look at the Baker Hughes data from last week, the rig count in the States fell by 5, down 14%, 654 versus 763 a year ago. In Canada, it's down 5%, 190 versus 201. The big drop in the States was in the natural gas sector because of the lower prices. They had 123 rigs working for natural gas, down from 160, or down 23%, and they had 525 rigs working for oil versus 601, so down 13%. And in Canada, the oil rig count was the one that fell, down 15% to 116 rigs versus 137. But because of the profitability of condensate and the need for condensate, natural gas rig count was up 4 last week to 74 versus 64, so it's up 16%. So we're doing better in Canada on the rig count, and we're holding up better. But in the United States, again, commodity prices matter. They're drilling longer reach wells, so we're seeing more production coming out of the oil basins there, particularly the Permian. But there is problems with production, you know, because they're going into tier two and tier three wells and drilling longer reach. But you know, your tier one inventory, I think, which is the highest productivity, you know, per well, has dropped. Again, all of these are price sensitive. If we get to $90 oil, tier two wells become tier one wells. If you get to $100 oil, tier three wells become tier two and tier one wells. So price matters. When you only have a price of $65, you don't have a lot of tier one wells, and which are the most prolific and most productive.
Is Alberta progressing in the withdrawal of lithium from unused oil wells?
Well, there's a lot of technology being done. I'm not an expert on that. I don't follow that. But I know that the brines and others are our companies working on that. You know, as I mentioned to you before, we're having our Catch the Energy conference on Saturday, October 14th in Calgary. And the TMX is hosting two rooms, which are on the renewable space. And they're going to have companies, you know, copper, lithium, helium, and all of the technologies related to the renewable world. So, you know, if people want to come to the conference, it's going to be much bigger than last year. We had 540 people there on October of 2022. We're going to have this one on Saturday, October 14th at Mount Royal University. And we're going to have, you know, 44, 45 companies presenting up from 34. And we've taken much more space, so there's more room, not only for people to go to the presentations of the companies, which individual investors don't really have a chance at. Annual meetings are more, you know, virtual now. So having a 25-minute presentation by the management, then a moderated Q&A, plus being able to go to the booth and spend time with them, is something that we've developed as an adjunct to our SER research product. And so people can just go to our website, catchtheenergyconference.com, and they can see there the access to the conference. And the best deal for them is to buy a quarterly subscription and get two complimentary passes to the conference. So not only do they get to go to the conference and meet the companies that they may own or may be interested in owning after they see the list, but they can also get our research almost for free for 3 months, and then it goes to the normal quarterly rate. So people just go, as I said, to the catchtheenergyconference.com, and they can see it, or they can just go to our website, ShachterEnergyReport.ca, and then they can be accessing our product line. But for people out there who own names in the energy sector, energy service companies, you know, pipeline infrastructure royalties, international E&P that are run by Canadian domiciled companies, and both oil and natural gas and service in Canada, we have a wide spectrum of companies that people can see on that website that are going to be presenting on Saturday, October 14th.
Joseph, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure as always, Jim.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary, and that his latest report just came out today, so check it out. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.